I'm speaking with John Quiggin, author of the book Zombie Economics, How Dead Ideas Still Walk Among Us. John Quiggin is an award-winning professor of economics at the University of Queensland. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Quiggin.
Pleased to be here.
And we are in a very surreal time here in the United States where we're still recovering from a recession, but now in the last quarter, growth dropped from 3.1% down to 1.8%. Many economists think that that could be a harbinger of a double-dip recession. At the very least, we're told that it's the spike in oil and food prices that's causing it. But the policies that are coming out of Washington and the debate that's coming out of Washington is one of deficit zeal, that this is the looming problem, is our deficits, when in fact we have a revenue crisis and there's no focus on getting people back to work. There's focus on cutting spending, and any economist, I think, in their right mind would make the point that we wouldn't even have a deficit if we had full employment. So I'm beginning to feel, I mean, this is Alice in Wonderland.
Well, it's striking, and this was why I wrote my book, that the ideas that caused the crisis, and indeed the very much the people and institutions that caused the crisis, are very much back on top. It's bonuses, and again, on Wall Street, whereas we still have in the US well over 9% unemployment, no real recovery in employment-population ratio, and yet it's the same people who caused the crisis pushing the shots and calling the shots, and the same ideas, which is where my focus is, the same ideas that really gave us the crisis are effectively back dominating the policy debate.
And give us a sketch, if you will, John Quiggin, of these zombie ideas that refuse to die.
Well, I took a package of ideas which I've called market liberalism, also sometimes called the Washington Consensus, and starts with the idea that the period from the mid-80s to just before the crisis, the idea that the economy had permanently stabilised and that all of this was due to this great moderation was due to the development of sophisticated financial markets and the kind of monetary policies that were being pursued by the Fed. Now, that was clearly wrong, but we've seen very much a desire to go back to those policies. Next up, the big idea that financial markets are perfectly efficient. They can make the best possible use of any information, so there's never any point in trying to control them, to rein in asset price bubbles and so forth. This efficient markets hypothesis, again, developed in the 1970s and has really led to disastrous outcomes. Then I have more specific criticisms of the way in which macroeconomic theory has developed into this highly abstract and rigorous body of thought called dynamic stochastic general equilibrium that makes for some great journal articles but really isn't very much help in dealing with the kind of policy problems we've just been talking about.
And the trickle-down hypothesis,
yeah,
alive and well?
And that's, I think, one of the ideas I hoped would be killed in terms of empirical evidence by this period of the last 30 years. We've had 30 years in which everybody's been told, look, just let the rich get richer and a rising tide will lift all boats. But we simply haven't seen that, particularly in the US. There's been hardly any real increase in the incomes of households of the median. And poorer households have definitely fallen backwards. Real wages have been declining for low-wage workers. All of this at a time when the income accruing to the top 1% of the population has just risen dramatically to something like 25% of total income.
Again, I'm speaking with John Quiggin, author of the book Zombie Economics, How Dead Ideas Still Walk Among Us. And John Quiggin is an award-winning professor of economics at the University of Queensland, and we're talking about how our economic debate is captured by these dead ideas. One of the things, though, John Quiggin, that troubles me, and I hope it's not true, but there's a certain amount of evidence that it might be true, that one of the things that's driving us into this dangerous kind of vortex of fundamentalism in terms of the deficit and cutting government and this whole mythology of the beast of big government needs to be slayed is that the influence of Ayn Rand, because, you know, the former chairman of the Fed, Alan Greenspan, was the executive of her estate, and one of the people that's the richest Americans, these Koch brothers, who are putting a lot of money into libertarian think tanks and directly into the Tea Party movement, which they've successfully created as a kind of faux populist movement that serves their ends. And they've got a lot of people elected as a result, and they are pushing for these huge government cuts. And it seems to me that this ideology that may well serve the billionaires, but, you know, it could reach a point where they could really kill the government off, which is exactly what they do, not so much in its size, but by essentially transferring public money into private hands. They create a new form of government.
Well, I think there's certainly a lot to be concerned about there. I guess Ayn Rand is a specifically American phenomenon. Certainly, I suppose more globally, people like Hayek, who's a serious economist, whereas I guess Ayn Rand is a bit of a fringe figure, but Hayek seems to be the figure that they mostly rely on. And Hayek seriously argued that that the kind of post-war welfare state that was developing in the UK would lead to a totalitarian serfdom. So, and his book, Road to Serfdom, is one that's still selling very well in the US, with these kinds of apocalyptic projections. So it does seem that those kind of ideas are alive and well. I hope, in writing my book, to point out some of the problems with them.
Well, the problems, though, are what we live with here. You know, we have little to no social safety net here in the United States. Healthcare reform was a bruising battle and a highly compromised outcome that's still under attack. And we're the only modern democracy where our citizens pay their taxes but don't seem to be concerned about getting services back in return, which seems to be the fundamental contract in any social democracy, is you pay your taxes and you get your government services. And if any politician tries to take those services away from them, they're history. Here, the debates are about all kinds of extraneous things like flag burning and abortion. And people complain about paying too much taxes, but they never talk about what they get back for their taxes, which is precious little. And yet we have a growing system of corporate welfare with the military-industrial complex, agribusiness, the big oil companies who are making record profits now are getting enormous government subsidies. This is the part of it where I don't understand how we get some clarity, and the entire press is bought into this whole looming deficit crisis as the main economic problem we have.
Well, certainly, I mean, of those, along with those groups, and I think more important than any of them in the current setup is the financial sector. It accounted for something like 40% of corporate profits in the immediate lead up to the crisis. It's recovered a lot of that, despite its spectacularly poor performance in the kind of functions it's supposed to perform of allocating investment capital and so forth. And to some extent, unlike some of the other groups you mentioned, not only pretty much owns the Republican Party, but also large numbers of Democrats really owe their financial base to support from Wall Street. So it's an incredibly powerful force, and it also affects the economics profession. I think there's a movie, Inside Job, which points out some direct examples of this, but it also creates an environment, I think, where economists, finance theorists and stuff do very well and so are less inclined to challenge the status quo.
Well, curiously enough, John Quiggin, again the author of Zombie Economics, How Dead Ideas Still Walk Among Us, the people who are arguing in the way that I was arguing a second ago for some sort of economic justice and for a basic social contract, which other social democracies operate on. The people who are, by the way, pointing out that we are in danger of becoming a plantation economy in a third world country, and every time, you know, you go out to a restaurant, you step over homeless people here in the United States. It's unheard of in a lot of European countries and certainly in Australia. So that is a growing phenomenon, but it seems to be taking people like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates among America's richest people to point out this, the dangers of the growing disparity in wealth.
Well, it's an odd phenomenon that billionaires seem to be more socially responsible than millionaires, unfortunately. Of course, on the other side of the coin, you've got the Koch brothers and people like that. But certainly what you see is that although you have a couple of individuals like that, they're really heretics in their class, that that group of the top 1% of the population, and within that even the 400 or 1,000 richest people, have an incredible degree of political influence, most of which, you know, those exceptions noted, is going in the opposite direction.
Getting back to your book, John Quiggin, Zombie Economics, How Dead Ideas Still Walks Among Us. What is the explanation for the Reagan and Thatcher experiments, which clearly failed and laid the groundwork for much of our economic problems today? They live on. I mean, we just had a situation here right next door in Canada where a right-wing government got elected largely because the left split their vote and allowed the Conservatives to win. But he's Harper is a disciple of Reaganism and Thatcherism. And, of course, as I say, it's alive and well here with this new Tea Party-dominated Republican House.
Yes, well, in the book, I really try and explain that these ideas didn't come from nowhere and try and give them their due as an intellectual system of ideas, because if we go back to the post-war period after 1945, things went very well for a long period with Keynesian macroeconomic management and with broadly improving social democratic policies. Those things ran into a huge mess in the 1970s, and I try and go through some of the details of that and how these market liberal ideas emerged as what seemed like a plausible alternative, and then how, in fact, as you said, these ideas have failed but still live on. So I've tried to trace the development of these ideas, show in particular how the experience of the global financial crisis proved the core ideas of market liberalism to be false, and then talk about how they've been revived in the recent period.
Well, but hasn't it led to this kind of hollow capitalism that we have? You mentioned earlier, John Quiggin, 40% of GDP coming from Wall Street, the growth of the financial sector over the manufacturing sector. I just don't understand, as a layperson, how an economic system can survive if it's all about extracting wealth and not creating wealth.
Well, I think certainly that's the conclusion I would draw, that we really have this grossly overdeveloped financial sector receiving far more in earnings than it contributes. There is a function for the financial sector, but not for one of the size that we have. And that really is a characteristic feature of unregulated capitalism, that this financial sector tends to grow and dominate things. And that's one of the reasons we need a mixed economy, which is the final chapter of my book, or the next to final chapter about the urge, as much outside the US as elsewhere, to privatise everything, get everything into private hands, that this sort of reflects a faith in the financial sector, which is just totally misplaced.
But when you talk about a mixed economy, is that a euphemism for some kind of government oversight?
Well, it covers government, either government provision of services like electricity and so forth, health and education. If you don't have that, you need extensive government regulation, has been the experience of countries that have attempted comprehensive privatisation. In the US, it's mostly been the same issues have mostly been fought out over regulation and deregulation.
Well, but that's not to say that there's not a move to privatise Social Security. Already pensions in this country have been eviscerated, and that is a growing trend. And now they're talking about the Ryan plan is essentially a privatisation of Medicare.
That's exactly right. And in the book and also in other work, I've argued that the reasoning behind the case for privatising Social Security is fundamentally wrong. And does, again, reflect this belief in financial markets, which is just unjustified.
So I take it, John Quiggin, you wrote this book, Zombie Economics, How Dead Ideas Still Walk Among Us, because you, like myself, I'm absolutely astounded that this reckless greed on Wall Street could take the entire international financial system to the brink of extinction, and we all, you know, the entire global financial system has a near-death experience, and the people responsible for it are made whole, and now they're not so much too big to fail anymore, these banks. They're even too bigger to fail, and they've consolidated their power, and one of the banks in particular, Goldman Sachs, has come out stronger than ever.
That's absolutely right. They're too big to fail, but also, I think, too interconnected to fail. As we saw back in 2008, if one bank goes down, it takes down the rest, and that takes down the entire trading system, so that failure of Lehman Brothers almost brought down AIG. That would have, if it had been allowed to happen, ruined Goldman Sachs, which, of course, can never be allowed to happen. But even coming close, we saw that the kind of basic functions of the credit system, financing, trade and so forth, ground to a halt, so that there was a very real risk then that the entire global economy would freeze. What we saw was a rescue which, as you say, made the bankers whole but has left the US with high rates of unemployment, people now, of course, running out of unemployment benefits, people who had nothing to do with the creation of this crisis.
Well, it's also had a peculiar political side effect, John Quiggin, and that is that the outrage over Wall Street, and particularly the TARP bailouts, in fact propelled the Tea Party into existence. And what is so extraordinary about it is that instead of the country's political debate moving to the left as a response to the failure of this laissez-faire capitalism on Wall Street, it's moved to the right.
It is striking. I mean, it's not unprecedented, of course. There were shifts to the right during the Great Depression initially. So I suppose we've seen, I think, the legislators elected by the Tea Party, of course, doing their absolute best to do the bidding of Wall Street, and perhaps over time that fact will sink home to some of the people who supported them. But it is striking to me how little lessons of the crisis have been learned.
Well, just in closing then, John Quiggin, again, author of the new book, Zombie Economics, How Dead Ideas Still Walk Among Us. Do you see any reversal of the trend towards the growing disparity in wealth, the growing privatization of government, where public money is ending up more and more in private hands and government services are being cut and diminished? Seems to be the track we're on. What do you think would reverse this, or where do you think the wake-up call would come from? Because we seem to have a polity here in the United States where the citizens are simply not aware of how much they're being fleeced.
Well, of course, my book's directed at the economics profession. I think, I mean, although it's incredibly conservative and slow to react, I think we are seeing some positive changes there, more influence for people like Paul Krugman and Joe Stiglitz, who've been critical of the more dominant views. And in the political scene, I guess I'm obviously looking at from outside, but the big fight back in Wisconsin, I think, is striking. I think people are starting to see through the Tea Party, especially the notion that it was this populist uprising, starting to see it as just the right wing of the Republican Party relabeled. So I think there's a hope that that will be beaten back. But then, of course, you have the problem that these same ideas really are shared in such a bipartisan basis. There really isn't that much of a difference between the two parties. And with the Republicans having gone so far to the right, it's very problematic. But I do see, I think, in some of those political developments, the beginnings of a counter-movement.
Given that the Germans have the healthiest economy in the world today, is this a phenomenon amongst English-speaking countries? We've got Cameron and going through their austerity program over in England and rediscovering Thatcher, and you've got the Republicans here rediscovering Reagan, who he's always been an icon. Can the Chinese, the Germans and others, are they doing something differently that maybe we can learn from?
Unfortunately, many of these same ideas have a big influence in Germany. They had a big fiscal stimulus, but now they're trying to wind that back, and there are big problems in, of course, the peripheral European countries. So the same fight, I think, is occurring in a different way outside the English-speaking world. Even here in Australia, where we had an incredibly successful fiscal stimulus, we're still sort of arguing in much the same terms as we did before. So I think that's going to be a long, hard struggle.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, John Quiggin.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with John Quiggin, author of the book Zombie Economics, How Dead Ideas Still Walk Among Us.